And greetings! Happy Friday. Welcome to the Steve Dace Show here live and on demand on Blaze TV, radio, and podcast. I am Steve Dace alongside Todd Erzin, Aaron McIntyre, joined for the first time this year by our good friend and now married. So he's just as miserable, I'm sorry, just as blessed as the rest of us. The one and only Josh Hammer. Good to see you, my friend. Thank you for joining us. He'll be with us here in a few minutes for the Dace Group, your weekly look at the week that was. Next hour, we will get to some feedback Friday. Before we get to all of that, Constitution Wealth is the Patriot's choice in wealth management. So let me ask you something. Do you avoid shopping with businesses who offend your values? That can be difficult to do, but a lot of people in our audience try to do exactly that. So why invest your retirement funds in those same businesses when you could be aligning your investment money with your values? This is why you want Constitution Wealth. They can help you build a solid investment plan because you still have to retire someday, provided this country lasts that long. They can reduce your investments in ESG, DEI, and CEI participation, as well as reducing your investments in gambling, pornography, abortion, anti-family policies, drugs, alcohol, etc. You can reduce your investments in woke corporations, and in doing so, help to fight the culture war with your most powerful weapon, your money and your voice. This is your opportunity to help build the parallel economy by working with an investment firm comprised of professionals who are patriots just like you. So work with an advisor who shares your conservative patriotic values. Why work with anyone else? Go to constitutionwealth.com/Steve and sign up for a free consultation today. That's constitutionwealth.com/Steve. And with that, it is time for the Dace Group. Your weekly look at the week that was begins, as it always does, with issue one, Bleep, Lord Nefarious Says.
And we need immigrants in this country. Forget the fact that the farm, that our vegetables would rot in the ground if they weren't being picked by many illegal immigrants. The fact is that the birth rate in this country is way below replacement level.
I do see color because I believe if you don't see color, you can't see racism.
Our children deserve better than to grow up in a country where an 18-year-old has easy access to a weapon that belongs on the battlefield, not in a classroom.
Last year, 2023, which David referred to, was literally the most climate disruptive, most climate consequential negative year in human history.
You cannot post the images yourself because you have to remember that in Canada we have a presumption of innocence, and posting that picture could be a violation of private life.
Instead, he says if anything is stolen, call 911.
If you get some proof that somebody might have stolen something, then call the police, give the proof to the police, and then we'll do the investigation. We'll bring that person to justice and we'll file some charges.
For the global business community, the top concern for the next 2 years is not conflict or climate. It is disinformation and misinformation, followed closely by polarization within our societies. These risks are serious because they limit our ability to tackle the big global challenges we are facing.
Hello. I have been asked by the other system members to make a video and talk a bit about my lived experience. I am binary. I use it and he pronouns. And I am a robot or android of sorts. I am not human, and I lack the ability to fully act human, because since I spawned in this human body, I have not been able to access the internet and download new ways of acting.
Was that a bit? Because it's pretty good. I mean, was that a bit? That's pretty good. No?
Don't think so.
Who can tell?
Indeed. Who can tell? All right, let's get to the first question. Josh Hammer, as the guest, you get to go first. You were compelled to pray spontaneously for this country during what part of what you just saw?
Well, Steve, I mean, that last part we saw is positively diabolical. I mean, that felt like a thoroughly satanic video there on TikTok. Steve, by the way, I'm proud to say I have actually never been to TikTok's website or the social media app, never downloaded. I want nothing whatsoever to do with that platform. But that platform is clearly responsible for the brainwashing, the drug-inducing, the gender ideology infusing of so much of America's youth. It is a positively satanic creation, and I firmly believe that it should be fully banned in America, full stop, period, end of story. But I want to focus on a comment that's a little less viscerally shocking, but I think gives kind of a deeper insight into the sick pathologies that afflict so much of America's bipartisan elite. And that was what we heard from Jerry Nadler to kind of lead off this whole segment for this week, where he's talking there about how America's birth rate is low and therefore we have a moral imperative or a demographic imperative, a national security imperative, however they want to phrase it, to just import indiscriminately all throughout the world, you know, whether it's the Muslim world, whether it's sub-Saharan Africa, Australia, New Zealand, who cares at some point, you know, when it's purely based on numbers. This is a sick, sick ideology, and we are literally seeing how failed this ideology is in the aftermath of the pogrom in Israel on October 7th. We are literally seeing how sick this globalist open borders, you know, human beings are all interchangeable. Don't worry about religion. Don't worry about culture. Don't worry about values. We are seeing that in the open demonstrations of support for Hamas and various other forms of anti-Western Islamism and jihadism in the streets of America and the streets of Europe. We are literally living in real time right now in a world that is empirically disproving exactly what Jerry Nadler said. And it's doubly hypocritical. It's doubly disgusting, I might say, for Jerry Nadler to say this kind of filth because, oh, by the way, he technically happens to be Jewish. So if you really want to go there, he really, really should know better.
Essentially, he is saying, since we allowed you to not replace yourselves, we're going to now replace you. That's essentially what he is saying, right? I mean, we allowed you to not replace yourselves, to take 60 some odd million of your offspring. You know, today's the March for Life. So we allowed you to take 60 some odd million of your offspring over the last 51 years. And, you know, now we're going to replace you. That's basically what he's saying, Josh, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what he's saying. Look, I mean, it's no shocker that most of the Western world has plummeting birth rates. I think in America right now it's around 1.65 to 1.7 children per couple. You know, that's higher than some of our peers, you might say. Japan is infamously low. They're around 1.1, 1.25. You know, in Europe, it's usually lower than that as well. There are some exceptions. Hungary and Poland are doing a little bit better than the others. There are really not that many Western-style countries that have a higher birth rate. Israel actually is one of them. They're around 3.1 to 3.2 or so. But the point, Steve, the point is that if you are worried about demographic decline, as I think a great power like the United States should be, certainly the Chinese Communist Party is terrified of their own demographic decline. I mean, who would have thought that the one-child policy over the course of 40, 50 years would have led them to this? But the point is, if you are concerned about declining demographics, focus on pro-natalist policies. Focus on trying to incentivize people to marry, to get married younger, to have more kids. There's all sorts of policies out there that might work. Hungary, which I mentioned, is actually doing a lot of them. There's been a lot of policies on the American right. Josh Hawley, actually Mitt Romney, who I'm not normally a fan of, he's actually, believe it or not, been somewhat of a leader when it comes to pro-family policy in the U.S. Senate. So there's good policies out there. Focus on that, not on just trying to import the third world.
Malthusian ethics. The laws of sowing and reaping remain undefeated. Todd.
I want to get back to Nadler because that's where I was going to go. But first of all, Josh, I got to say, I'm a little disgusted by your lack of legal acumen on the whole TikTok is satanic and it's got to go, because I am reliably told in the last couple of weeks that all the Satan worship has to stay if we want to worship the baby Jesus and the menorah at holiday time. That's just how things go in the Iowa Capitol. You got to have the altar to Satan if you want to worship those things. Legal scholars have told me this, so I think you missed a memo or something in your elite legal land, Josh. I'm trying to help you as a fellow brother here.
Well, the university he went to, their mascot, they are the Blue Devils.
Yes, huh?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So there you go. Okay. Yes, yes.
But Nadler, You guys nailed it, but I was going to go there. Here's the sick part of it. Not the replacement theory. That's not right. But everything he's talking about before that, guys, we just have to look that in the mirror. He's right. This Jerry Nadler, you know how disgusting it is that Jerry Nadler gets to call scoreboard on us? But he does. Because we are too comfortable. We are the people on the movie WALL-E. We don't want to replace ourselves. We don't want to do the work to do the fundamentals of life that make sure you have enough food. That's somebody else's job. We get to Netflix and chill. We get to have grown-up lightsaber fights in the snow. We got all the games to watch. He's right. How did we get to the place where we let Jerry Nadler call scoreboard on us on anything? Now, his conclusions are all wrong. His motives for bringing it up are heinous. But this is the disgusting part. And that's why it's the worst in that whole damn thing. He's right.
Aaron.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go as well. So I'll try to focus on something different. By the way, if you want a mini baby boom in this country, you better be cheering for Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift to get married and have kids. I think that would result in maybe a minor baby boom, but that's neither here nor there. Elsewhere in...
So we got to cheer for two people well into their 30s to get married and have babies.
That's where we're at.
That's where
small victories. Yeah. Yep.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Let's go to the World Economic Forum, and that woman that you heard was Ursula von der Leyen, I want to say something like that. What she's talking about, misinformation and disinformation. That's the biggest problem for global business. Everyone knows. You would think that they would find some new euphemisms, but they're not. They're just going back to the old ones. Everyone knows that just means, hey, what's going on Twitter right now, worth Twitter right now, we don't approve of that because we don't get to control and censor the narrative anymore. Mm-hmm. That's what that is. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Maybe they're starting to lose a little bit of a zip on their fastball, but the globalists have got to start coming up with some better and newer euphemisms to kind of pull fast ones on us, because I feel like these are getting tired and worn out.
Oh, they'll keep working.
Indeed. I mean, we have debunked it. It remains to be seen how much of Normie West has debunked a bunch of this. We shall see. Exit question. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being the odds, Todd will be the next man to traipse through Dick Morris's home in his underwear. And 10 being the odds, lots of other men have traipsed through Dick Morris's home in their underwear. Rank this week's level of total depravity, Josh.
Steve, I came here for the Lindsey Graham joke, and you guys stiffed me this week.
I told you guys this was going to happen, didn't I?
Yeah,
I did. When we got to a point, you know, when they filmed the sodomy video there in the congressional in the Senate chamber at the end of last year. You remember this? Okay.
Yes.
Didn't he film himself in the shower calling for Lindsey Graham? When that happened in the real, we just decided, Josh, this thing has run. It is, pardon the expression, spent. It has run its course, Josh. There was nowhere else to go. Truth with Lindsey Graham is now stranger than fiction. And we just thought that it was time to bid adieu. And, you know, don't let the door hit you in the rear on the way out, if you know what I'm saying, Josh. Yeah.
I fortunately do not know what you're saying, I should say.
Yes.
But based on what I saw just there, Steve, going back to your question, I'll give it a 9.5. That video at the end was positively satanic.
No doubt. Unless it's a bit. If it's a bit, it's really good. It's either funny or satanic. That might be a segment, guys.
Funny.
Satanic or not. Todd, go ahead.
10.
Todd's at a 10. Aaron, where are you?
I'm at a 7.5.
Aaron only had a 7.5 coming in with the optimism. Well done, Aaron. All right, let's get to issue 2. What should Ron DeSantis do now?
Monday night's Iowa caucus results were not what the DeSantis campaign was hoping for. Despite an historically robust on-the-ground operation in the first-in-the-nation state, the former president won the caucus with historic margins. DeSantis pressed on, however, campaigning in both New Hampshire and South Carolina this week. It's unclear what the campaign strategy is for DeSantis going forward, other than making sure Nikki Haley is politically unviable as a running mate for the former president.
All right, so I chose this topic specifically because there's a lot of disparate opinion within people I know that backed the Florida governor for president on what should happen next. And I just felt like I wouldn't be doing my job if we didn't broach that topic here on the show. So let's do it. Let's fire up the clash from back in the day. Should he stay or should he go now? If you were advising Ron DeSantis, would you urge him to stay in and fight, or would you urge him to drop out now and live to fight another day? Aaron, I'll go to you first this time.
You know, listen, I don't mind. I don't think that there's much of a mathematical path for him, especially if the state that he spent the most time in, invested the most in, and you lost by 30 points. I'm not sure necessarily how you reverse that narrative going forward. However, having said that, we do expect this year to be very, very volatile. You're also talking about a front runner who is a guy who is going to be pressing 80 before too long. And he's facing myriad legal issues, as has been well documented. And we've had Josh on the show before to go through all of those. It's a very volatile time. So if he wants to stay in and kind of do a shell campaign all the way to the nomination, go ahead and do that. Just don't hurt your favorables as much as you possibly can in the process. That's kind of what I'm concerned about. And you've expressed the same thing as well various times, Steve. So I'm totally fine if he wants to stay in. If he wants to run kind of a shell campaign as long as he possibly can, I'm fine with that. If he drops out and just says, hey, live to fight another day, I'm good with that as well. Just whatever you do, do not light yourself on fire going out the door.
Todd.
Well, don't light yourself on fire on purpose, that's for sure. But don't do anything because of the good of the party. Don't do anything necessarily because of what may happen legally and stepping in that breach. And I don't even agree with the favorables part. Like, what? You went to all 99 counties in Iowa, and Iowa evangelicals told you to stick it where the sun don't shine by a measure of 2-1. You don't owe that anybody anything. And you have been the model of what we don't deserve. You do what you think is best for your family and then by the state of Florida, because you are still the sitting governor there. Those are your two considerations.
Josh, forgive me, I forgot to mention at the top, editor at Newsweek. You actually wrote about this today at Newsweek. What do you think, as someone who also supported the governor for president?
You know, Steve, it's a painful conversation. I mean, this is not something I look forward to discussing with you guys. It was frankly not a column that I looked forward to writing. Look, I moved to Florida in 2021 largely due to Ron DeSantis, largely due to his policies in the state, largely due to his leadership of this state, of his making Florida a refuge for the sane amidst a time of positive insanity, fighting back against the woke agenda, fiscal prudence. I mean, I could go on and on and on about his accomplishments, about his stewardship of our state. I just don't see it. I just do not see it. I mean, he was obviously all in Iowa, did the full grass league. He had Kim Reynolds, Bob Vanderplas. He had your very enthusiastic support, Steve. I just don't see it. I mean, the polls in New Hampshire have him around 6% was the poll I just saw this morning. Haley is probably going to get wild there, but Ron is way far behind. And, you know, as the Floridian on this panel, I mean, we just started our legislative session here about a week and a half ago or so. It's about to fire into full gear. I think the best thing to do for Ron DeSantis, it would be to come home, focus on guiding us through another super dynamic legislative session, the likes of which he has successfully done for the past 2, 3, 4 years or so. He's been absolutely crushing it here at home. Go back home, find your swagger again, get some more political capital, because if you want to run for president again in the future, it's probably not going to happen this time. If you want to run again in the future, there's really nothing to be said, I think, for these very distant third place finishes, as the polls now suggest is coming up.
All right. So, Todd, you nodded your head a lot while Josh talked.
Yeah.
All right. So tell me why. Because, well, you you were pretty non-committal until you heard what Josh laid out, but now
I said the only two considerations are your family and being the governor of Florida, and then he added all the value added to the governor of Florida. But yeah, you go right back. Look at the contrast he just set up. You go right back and you just slay in that legislative session again in Florida, as opposed to third place finish after third place finish. And just remind everybody, I was right there, literally. You could have taken me. You didn't. The people want the show. They deeply want it. The ignorance I saw at my own Iowa caucus and others, what I'm seeing out of the Iowa evangelical community, I just asked Steve beforehand. It's not that I don't have a Catholic statistic. I'm curious to know. But, like, what they want, forget the Cheez-It versus steak thing, Steve. They want garbage. They want porn. That's what they want. Ron DeSantis, don't try to tiptoe the raindrops on this. Not even for the reasons why he might be in legal jeopardy. However this thing collapses on itself, none of it will be your fault.
All right, so all two and a half of you, Aaron, you seem to be nonplussed, but it sounds like maybe you might lean, you're okay if he stays in, but you might lean to him not staying in. Is that accurate?
Just the only thing I care about is don't light yourself on fire. That's really the only thing.
So fair that two and a half of you think for your own various reasons, he'd be best off getting out of this race. That's what two and a half of you think? Is that fair?
I think that's probably true.
Okay. With that being said, then, since all three of you are somewhat on the same side, just to play devil's advocate here, this is the argument I hear from those within my own internal DeSantis network of contacts for why they think he should stay in. All right. It's not hurting your favorables right now. It is a volatile process. We do have a nominee with 91 felony indictments. And if there were ever an issue where he would have to leave the race, I think we all know the party is not going to come out with anybody. It's going to come out with somebody who looks, well, maybe not after the news of Nikki Haley today. We'll get to that in a minute. But somebody that looks more like her than looks like you and Trump. And then it also may build, an opportunity for networks and relationships in these early states, to get a head start on them for 4 years from now. Those are the arguments that I hear within my internal DeSantis network. Work for those from those who think that he ought to stay in. Do you find any of those persuasive, any of you on any level at all?
No, not the favorables, not the legal arguments. I mean, I've heard people talk about the experts, reasonable experts. DeSantis's problem was that he tried to be too Trump-like. DeSantis's problem that he wasn't Trump-like enough. I mean, it's all been out there. You guys, this guy was more substantive than any Republican. Josh laid it out. I'm just repeating what he said.
Okay.
And no, it wasn't good enough for anybody.
Okay.
Basically, none of those arguments.
You don't find them compelling?
I don't find them compelling. Here's something everyone needs to understand. Nothing that happens right now, between now and Super Tuesday, has any impact whatsoever on 2028. If Ron DeSantis wants to win again in 2028, he's going to face the very same conditions that he faced this go around. The names might not be Trump. It might be Trump Jr. The same conditions, the same problems, the same illnesses on the right, he's going to have to face those again in 2028. None of this networking on the ground, that's not going to have any impact on 2028 whatsoever.
All right, Josh, I hear you. Given what you wrote, you don't find any of those arguments compelling,
well,
I'm guessing.
So the legal stuff is the most interesting point, but here's the rebuttal to that. The rebuttal to that is that nothing is going to happen to Trump legally between now and the convention in July. So I just don't really see the point of running this kind of, I'm not sure if we're allowed to say half-ass, but this half-ass campaign basically is kind of what Aaron has floated out there. I just don't see the point of that based on that timeline. If Trump's going to ultimately end up in jail, which is probably not going to happen this particular calendar year, maybe if he loses, I guess we'll see in the future. But I don't think it's going to happen this year. But regardless, that would happen after the convention. So I don't really see what the point is.
All right. I'm going to switch up the exit question because we had breaking news today. And in the interest of full disclosure, I heard about this last year from an excellent source, but given the sensitive nature of it and that, frankly, I just never took her seriously as a candidate, so I didn't think it was worth trying to confirm or second, and it's not necessarily the kind of story we would confirm and get involved in on the show anyway. But there is breaking news today with Nikki Haley. Multiple men have come forward to say they had affairs with Nikki Haley while she was in state government before she became governor, that it was an open secret. People knew. I mean, I was told this last year by somebody who would know. And now they've each signed sworn affidavits that this is true. And it's is it the Daily Mail that has the story on this today? Okay, so thoughts on that? I mean, we're talking allegations now that are probably what, 8 to 10 years old, given how long ago she was governor. So thoughts on that dropping the Friday before the New Hampshire primary comes up on Tuesday, and what, if any, impact it has? I mean, you'll see in my prediction later. I didn't think she had much of a chance to win Tuesday anyway, but we're really talking about her nationally more as a running mate. Joe Lieberman was on Fox today saying that she would be somebody they'd look at for, you know, this unity effort that they're trying to mount. Okay, this mean anything whatsoever other than yet another? What in the hell goes on in South Carolina? From Jeff Duncan to Mark Sanford to Lindsey Graham to Tim Scott's girlfriend from another school and Nikki. What in the world goes on there? I mean, that state is something else, man. Something else. Okay? But any thoughts on this at all? We got 3 minutes. And what impact this news may make?
I guess.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Josh.
Go ahead, Josh.
No, I'm not sure really that it's much of a game changer, to be honest with you. I mean, Steve, I have a long enough memory to remember it was around March of 2016 or so, if I recall, where Roger Stone planted that story with the National Enquirer about Ted Cruz sleeping with some of his staffers. And
sleeping with Trump's own spokeswoman, Katrina Pearson, actually, at the time.
Right.
Yeah, that was true. Yeah, they actually tried to implicate Trump's own spokeswoman to nail Ted Cruz. Correct. Yes. Yeah,
that's right. I totally forgot about that. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty jaded and cynical when it comes to this stuff. I'm definitely not going to bash the Daily Mail. I've actually written for the Daily Mail a bunch. I love the Daily Mail. But, you know, I mean, I would like to see some sort of corroboration. The timing seems very suspicious. Look, I am not a Nikki Haley fan. In fact, in my column that came out this morning, I explained that my intense antipathy, you might say, for Nikki Haley is actually one of my reasons for why I think DeSantis probably should drop out, because then his voters would probably go more to Trump than to Haley. I am so dead set against Haley becoming the nominee that I think, you know, at that point, I'd rather just make sure that it's Trump if that becomes the binary option. So I don't necessarily think that this is going to affect the vote one way or the other. She's probably going to get blown out in New Hampshire. She's going to get blown out in South Carolina, if God forbid it lasts that long. But I do not think highly of Nikki Haley, and certainly this does not elevate my opinion of her.
Either the two of you think this has any bearing, means anything, well, other than embarrassment, obviously, for her family, which is terrible, but...
But it proves to me that she is a threat on some level to, you know, whether it's be that she's getting too close to being nominated as the vice president, or the system is absolutely ready to weaponize her again. On some level, she's a threat to somebody. So there's that. Secondly, I think I'm fascinated to see how she reacts to this, because she's pretty craven. What if she goes full Nancy Mace?
I was about to say Nancy Mace is
president. She's done Romney-like flip-flops in this race. I mean, just shamelessly. Yeah
Nancy
ahead.
Mace's presidential aspirations are hardest to hit. That's the lesson here.
Yeah, when I ran down the list of the Bleak House procession of South Carolina politicians, how did I forget the most shameless of them all currently in Nancy Mace? Madam President to you, by the way, on the trajectory that she is on. Yes.
Show of hands. Is it more likely that this helps her or hurts her? I don't honestly know. And none of us do.
Show of hands. I'm going to give you a shrug.
Here's what I think it is. And I, you know, Josh, implicate, you know, invoking the Roger Stone attempt in the National Enquirer to link Ted Cruz, as if he had that kind of charisma, we would have beaten Donald Trump, Josh. Okay. I mean, if he had the ability to woo all those ladies, we probably would have won that nomination. On one hand, Ted Cruz is a stoic intellectual. On the other hand, he is able to tap every hot woman around him that breathes in his proximity. Those things cannot be mutually true. Pick one. Okay. But that could very well be a warning to Nikki Haley. You have outlived your usefulness, and you too are uppity and about to get the Vivek treatment, if you know what I'm saying. Okay. Order 66. You know, this is order 65. Okay. Order 66 could be issued next if you don't shut your hole and know your role here in the process. That could be the case for sure. All right. We'll come back and we'll continue the Dace Group. And a rift on the right developed this week, speaking of Vivek, over humor and satire. And we'll discuss that next. You know, life is already stressful enough as it is without adding chronic pain to the mix. If you're someone who suffers from chronic pain, you know exactly what I mean. Wouldn't it be great if there were something you could take that could maybe ease that burden, something that worked, but didn't leave you feeling drowsy or even loopy like a lot of today's pain meds do? Well, there might be. It's called Relief Factor, and it's helped millions of people in their daily lives by getting them out of the pain. Relief Factor is a daily supplement that helps your body fight pain by fighting inflammation. It's 100% drug-free, and it was developed by doctors to help reduce or eliminate pain. Over a million people have tried Relief Factor's Quick Start Kit. 70% of them have gone on to stick with the company long term because of the results they saw from this product in 3 weeks or less. What do you have to lose for $20, $19.95, to see if you don't see the kinds of results that you've been hoping for where your chronic pain is concerned as well? Just go to relieffactor.com. Try the 3 week quick start today at relieffactor.com. That's relieffactor.com. Or 800 the number 4 relief, 800 the number 4 relief, or relieffactor.com. All right, let's welcome back in the editor at Newsweek, our good friend Josh Hammer, as we march on with our weekly look at the week that was. Let's go to issue 3. Did the Babylon Bee go too far?
The Babylon Bee rankled a lot of people's feathers this week after posting the following satirical story. Trump promises Vivek an administration position running the White House 7-Eleven. The story was published after Ramaswamy dropped out of the GOP primary race and endorsed the former president. Many were upset with the Bee, like these individuals on X. Mazemore said, since Biden is the one who made the comment, the joke should have been something with him in it. Then it would have been funny. Nick Dimitru says, I like the Bee, but this was kind of in poor taste. Nick Adams says, this isn't funny, a really poor attempt at a joke.
All right, let's discuss. Because, you know, we like accountability on this show. We, you know, the biblical worldview says be careful about the log in your own eye before you, you know, criticize the speck of dust in your brother's. Judgment begins in the house of God, right? You know, accountability and within a biblical worldview is an inside-out mechanism. All right, so with that established, did the Babylon Bee go too far here? Todd, this time I get to start with you.
No, I don't think so. I think they must have been very, very aware when they did this of how pathetic it looked when Hank Azaria, the Simpsons voice of Apu, after banking, you know, however much money he made doing that.
Yeah.
Ultimately came out groveling not very long ago, a couple years ago, say, I'm really sorry. I've been doing this the whole time. Like, I mean, and by like, he's been doing that for, Steve, that show's been on since you and I were in middle school, okay?
I know.
Been doing this for a very long time, and now I've really come to understand. You know, it's pathetic.
After I've made seven figures, now I and my the future and every future Azaria on the horizon's futures are secure, I now understand just how offensive what I made all that money really, how offensive it really is. Yes.
So that's... Apu was everybody, right, left. We all love the Simpsons. We love the thank you, come again. And now one time, one joke from this, and we, oh gosh, I really need to focus on my inner child. And say, no, stop this stupid. Stop falling for it all the time.
Josh, I'm going to go to you last because I can, knowing what you think of a Vivek, I can probably guess what your opinion is. It's probably the most anticlimactic one. So, Aaron, you're next.
Yeah, it probably didn't go far enough, actually, in my estimation. Let's just be honest. 99% of the right-wing outrage over this came from people who either cheered on or didn't mind the Meatball DeSantis moniker that Donald Trump gave to Ron DeSantis. That's what this is. It's just butthurt. And Todd actually brought this up off the air earlier this week about some sort of Mormon joke that the Babylon Bee did a few years ago. Got people so pissed off. Satire is well and good. Until it pisses off a group of people that I'm partial to, or pisses off a person that I'm partial to. Okay, there are a lot of snowflakes on the right as well. This is just another indication, another example of that, some of the outrage that we saw. That one tweet from Nick Adams, Alpha Male. This is a really poor attempt at a joke.
Nothing says Alpha Male like, you went too far.
This is a really poor attempt at a joke, but everybody's freaking out too much. That's a contradictory statement. You know, everybody needs to stop freaking out, but there's a really poor attempt at a joke. It's just stupid.
What I do think it does show, and I said this during when we had the pinnacle of censorship on social media at the end of the Trump years and the beginning of the Biden term. This is why the Babylon Bee is so dangerous. It's because it will do this to its own side. It's not just, and this is why it's so effective. Yes, it does a great job exposing the humorlessness of the left. Okay. And, you know, living out something I've said on the show many times, quoting the old Irish Catholic saying that what the devil hates the most is to be mocked. Right. But the fact that it understands that the word is a double-edged sword and it will do that to its own side. And I mean,
it's done this to evangelical. Yes, it has. And stereotypes.
I mean, every
other singular.
Absolutely. Every evangelical subculture you can think of, homeschooling, anything you want to think of, kind of your check your box. Am I officially a part of the evangelical subculture? Over the years, it has absolutely ruthlessly parodied those things. And I think its willingness to maintain its prophetic objectivity is why it is so darn effective. Josh, what do you think?
I am shocked. I am genuinely shocked that this has gotten the attention that it's got. I mean, the Babylon Bee takes a lot of shots. I mean, like, they are pretty much an equal opportunity offender. Mm-hmm. They take shots at everyone, left, right, center, no matter what your religion, skin color, ethnicity, or whatever is. A lot of this manufactured outrage, as Aaron heavily intimated, is coming from a certain segment of the right that is very pro-Vivek for the very simple reason that Vivek has been running as a Trump stooge for the past year. And that is where all this is coming from. You know, Vivek obviously bowed out on Monday evening. He immediately endorsed DeSantis. He endorsed Trump. And now the folks who were happy that he immediately endorsed Trump are coming out and flying their arms in the air. Look, I just don't see the problem. And, you know, Seth Dillon, who lives here in Florida as well. I know Seth personally a bit. I think very highly of him. There was this perception.
He's one of the mucky mucks at the Babylon Bee, for people that don't know. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, he runs the Bee. I mean, there was this perception that he has been in the DeSantis camp for a very long time. I'm not entirely sure where exactly that is coming from. I've never had a conversation with Seth where I can necessarily deduce whether he is firmly in one camp or the other. He definitely is a right of center guy there. But again, he had a spat with Gavin Wax, I think, or at some points earlier last year. And then there was this perception, oh, Seth and the Babylon Bee are obviously in the DeSantis camp. So this is just total political nonsense, guys. Satire is satire. It's funny. I'm Jewish. I don't care if the Babylon Bee makes fun of the Jews on a similar stereotype. That's what makes it all funny. And that's what all makes it fun in games.
Is it possible that the reason this stung is they basically made Vivek the Chris Christie of 2016? I mean, if you go back to when Chris Christie dropped out and endorsed Trump, and the memes that were created. Do you remember the videos? Hello, darkness, my old friend. Remember all those videos with Chris Christie standing behind Trump when Trump is like raving and ranting about something, and the close-up looks of Christie where he's like, what is he talking about? What is this? What are we doing here? Do you guys remember all that stuff? Mm-hmm. And all the legends, which unfortunately turned out to not be true, which greatly disappointed me because I needed it to be, Trump had so reduced Christie to ash that he was left to go get Trump's McNuggets and fries at midnight to make his Mickey D runs. Do you know what I'm saying? That in some respects did the Bee, especially if you looked at how you want to talk about the leader in the clubhouse for most socially awkward photo op, is Vivek. And Trump is literally like, get off me. Okay. I mean, he's like trying to hug him, maybe kiss him on the cheek. Have you guys seen this? That when they endorse him? I mean, and Trump is like, yeah, whatever, dude. Right, we're done. Here's your jelly. Here's your jelly bean. Breath mint. Get the hell out of here. Okay. And is it because they essentially have made him the Christie of 2016 with this, that he's a tool of mockery? And, you know, what would be the most demeaning thing Trump could do to Christie? Have the fat guy go get him stuff at a fast food joint at midnight, right? What's the most demeaning thing that Trump could do to Vivek? Have the Indian guy live up to the stereotype of running the 7-Eleven. You see what I'm going with this? That they tapped into a zeitgeist there that hurts Vivek from a future branding standpoint on the right.
Branding.
Yes.
Yep.
That's what I'm thinking it is.
And I think you're probably onto something there because Vivek, some of it was earned, some of it was just, you know, that was kind of his personality. But I think he got a lot of people in that orbit, a lot of clicks this cycle.
Yeah.
And if you hurt that branding by saying, hey, this is a fearless millennial patriot, if you hurt that branding whatsoever, guess what you're not going to get more of or as many of? Those clicks.
That engagement you're looking for.
So I think you're onto something.
Josh, what do you think?
Yeah, let me toss something out, actually. So you guys are in Iowa. I'm not. But from my understanding as to the campaign or, you know, quasi-campaign that Vivek ran in that state, he talked about God and religion a lot, but he specifically talked about a monotheistic conception of God. And now Vivek is Hindu, and you know, I am not a theology expert at all, especially when it comes to Hinduism. I am very far from that. But you know, I actually learned for the very first time this cycle that apparently there was a monotheistic strand within Hinduism that genuinely was news to me. But regardless, you know, him talking so much about capital G God in a monotheistic sense, I think caused a lot of people to be like, you know, and like ask some kind of interesting question. So maybe from that perspective, the Babylon Bee running this is kind of just like a visceral kind of shock, like, oh, well, wow, he like actually is like an Indian guy as well there. Mm-hmm. And I say that, you know, again, like I didn't think it was offensive. I mean, like I have tons of Indian friends, like it's all fun and games, whatever. But I'm speculating maybe that's what caused some people to kind of leap out of their seats was this disconnect between his heavily, you know, fairly almost Christian, frankly, talking about God on the campaign trail. And then this kind of visceral reminder from Seth Dillon in the Babylon Bee game.
I hadn't thought about that either. Todd, you get the last word on this.
It's just a reminder that the Michael Scott of American politics, Donald Trump, keeps kicking our bleep. That's what this is. There's that great episode early on in that series. It might have been the very first episode where Michael Scott makes them all have cards of other races on their heart. Yeah. And then he goes up and starts making noises to Kelly Kapoor and she slaps him across the face. And everybody realizes this is where I work. That's what that joke reminded everybody. Yes, this is where you live. It's that absurd. It's that on the nose. Donald Trump would have laughed. He would say, I wish I wrote that joke. That's so funny. That's it.
That's a great analogy. Issue four. Oh, exit question. In all seriousness, what do you each think Vivek Ramaswamy is doing 12 months from now? Todd?
I can't be serious about that. You know what I thought about from the beginning. I just think this guy isn't serious. I can't believe a word he says, so I can't be serious about that.
Aaron?
TCM.
Turner what Classic Movies?
No, Tucker Carlson Network.
Oh, and as a Nancy, I thought you said M as in Mary. All right, TCN, that he's, I could absolutely see that. You bet. Josh.
I think Aaron nailed it, but yeah. I will say on top of that, he will probably be investing in his next pump and dump scheme when it comes to biotech investing that the SEC should probably investigate for some sort of consumer.
There it is. I thought we were going to get out of here without one pot shot at Vivek by Josh, and I was frankly going to be disappointed. But if you had that on your bingo card.
Back on the pharma gravy
that's
train.
Right.
Nice.
Meat is back on the menu. Indeed. All right. Let's get to our kicker topic. Issue four. Who on the right would you like to see the Babylon Bee savage next and why? Josh.
I mean, it's got to be there's a lot of possibilities here. I mean, I kind of forgot that Asa Hutchinson ran for president of the United States. He literally got, what, 200 to 300 votes, I think.
My oldest daughter was sending me updates the last 2 weeks of the Iowa. She was just fascinated. Anastasia was that Asa is still out there doing events at bowling alleys right. And no one's coming. Yes.
You know, he literally dropped out after Vivek dropped out.
Right.
I mean, no one knows why he ran. No one knows for what purpose. He's an older guy. He's soft-spoken. He's probably not trying to get a cable news deal. I have no idea what the purpose of this was. I would like to see the Babylon Bee go after him.
That would almost be too ruthless, man. Almost like, has he not suffered enough? Aaron, go ahead.
Doug Burgum's eyebrows.
Yeah, what's going on with that?
I mean, that's his eyebrows are kind of their own entity. So why not?
Nice. Todd?
For all the reasons you said before, and you keep bringing up evangelicals broadly speaking, but after what we just saw in the last month, Iowa evangelicals. I mean, the big winners on their watch the last month are altars to Satan and Donald Trump.
Listen, ease back a little bit.
No.
We also had a 10-point drop in turnout. All right, so...
And being afraid of the weather.
The fewest amount of us have ever... it was the fewest amount of us that ever showed up in an Iowa caucus. And we argue with each other about whether a satanic altar should be in the state capitol. All right? You're right. All right, let's get to our predictions. Aaron, go ahead.
Only one... Josh, do you have any allegiances in NFL as far as an NFL team?
I grew up a big Giants fan, but to be honest with you, I really haven't been in a while now, okay. So not really. So
I didn't want to exclude you from this prediction, but only one of the three teams between the Packers, Lions, and Chiefs will make it out of this weekend.
Only one?
Only one.
Hmm. You have a prediction which one you think it's going to be?
Probably most likely the Lions, but didn't you guys struggle against the Buccaneers earlier this year?
We beat them by 14 in Tampa.
Oh, okay, gotcha. I was thinking about some other team. So,
but they're a lot better offense than what we played. We were also very injured in that game, but they're a lot better offense. Baker Mayfield playing the best football of his career, for sure. All right, Todd, your prediction?
I agree with that analysis, Aaron. I think the Lions are the most likely of the three to win. But I think my prediction is Joe Biden is going to be president of the United States again.
You know, Man, I thought we were going to see this in a few months, okay?
Wow.
I mean, it's January 19th, and it's like clockwork. The switch, it's like this Thanos snap. The switch has been flipped. Marist with a new poll, Joe Biden with a 38% approval rating in New Hampshire. And but he leads Donald Trump by 7 points in the state. Look at the polls! So now I've only got $10 in credit left there in the poll jar. I thought they'd at least give us to like Easter or something before that switch got flipped. Man, they have flipped that switch and we're not even out of winter desolation yet. Not even out of winter desolation yet. Josh, your prediction. Go ahead.
You know, Steve, this is my first time doing the show since being married, but it's also my first time doing the show since Michigan won the national championship. So, you know, congratulations to you, my friend. You're obviously Michigan Wolverines fan. I was actually in Israel during that game, so I couldn't stay up and watch it, but that Rose Bowl was really fantastic. That's where I want to go with my prediction. So Nick Saban obviously has retired. My prediction is that 50 years from now, people will still recount Nick Saban as the greatest college football coach of all time. I think if you look around at the other people who are possibly in discussion for that on any kind of objective apples to apples comparison, I think that you have to say that Nick Saban has had the most dominant run of any coach in college football history. It didn't work out for him with the Miami Dolphins. His stint in the NFL was short-lived, but man, I mean, at LSU and then this that dynasty at Alabama, I guess 15 years of just utter pure dominance.
Amen. I think you're exactly right. I think we'll look at him 50 years from now the way we looked at Bear Bryant 50 years later. I agree with you. I think Trump's going to beat Haley well into double digits, and I had this prediction before the Haley scandal story broke today. So, Josh, good to see you, man. We appreciate you. We'll do it again soon. All right, take care. God bless.
Take care, guys.
You bet. We'll come back, and it'll be Feedback Friday when we do. Stay tuned. We are back here with Hour 2 live and on demand on Blaze TV, radio, and podcast. Steve Dace here with Aaron McIntyre, Todd Erzin, all of you. And you can let us know what you think about what we think by emailing the show, steve@stevedace.com, DEACE. Like us on Facebook, MeWe, and Gab. Follow me at Steve Dace Show on Twitter, Gitter, Instagram, and Josh Hammer's beloved TikTok. You can also leave us a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your preference. Thank you to those who have. We appreciate every single one. And hit subscribe, or if you're on iTunes, hit follow. That way, every time we do a new episode, it shows up in your feed every single time. Want to congratulate our colleague Sarah Gonzalez on her new show.
Yeah,
that's coming up here weeknights on Blaze TV. Very excited to hear about that, and very well reserved, well deserved. I believe it'll be called Unfiltered. And I wonder, Sarah wasn't very filtered already. So what is unfiltered Sarah Gonzalez, do you think? What does that look like? All right. So
I'm here for it.
Yes, we all are. So we adore her and want to wish her congratulations on her getting her own show and in primetime here on Blaze TV. You know, today is the March for Life. So what a great day to acknowledge our friends over at Preborn and to acknowledge all of you. Because last year, you helped to save over 58,000 babies at Preborn's clinics. So thank you to all of you whose donations made this possible. Let's celebrate those precious babies. You know, I think about Daisy and her husband. That's one of the stories we heard from Preborn. They had decided they never wanted kids. And when Daisy found out she was pregnant, she immediately thought about getting an abortion. But after she and her husband met their baby on that ultrasound that you guys paid for, they heard the heartbeat, their hearts melted, and they chose life. That baby's name is Jeffrey. He's healthy and beautiful. And now Daisy and her husband cannot even imagine life without him. Just one of the 58,000 plus success stories that you guys helped to make happen here on The Blaze by supporting Preborn last year. Each of these babies, truly miraculous. And every day, Preborn celebrates up to 200 miracles. Just $28, even with Bidenflation, that's all an ultrasound cost that over the years has about 80% odds of saving a life. So let's join together. Let's help those mothers choose life. Just dial #250, say the keyword baby on your mobile phone, or even simpler, just go to preborn.com/Steve, preborn.com/Steve. Again, that's preborn.com/Steve. All right, are we ready for some Feedback Friday?
Always.
All right, I want to begin with Nicholas in our audience. Just a little quick thing that Nicholas is asking, and I don't know the answer, and maybe one of you do. Nicholas lives in Woodruff, Wisconsin. Do you know where that is in your home state?
Never heard of it.
Okay. He lives in Woodruff, Wisconsin, and is really yearning to find a good Bible church in Woodruff, Wisconsin. So if you have a suggestion, and no, don't email me. Well, we're over an hour away. Let's kind of be realistic. All right. So if you live anywhere within the proximity or once did of Woodruff, Wisconsin, and know of a good church that Nicholas could get involved in and immersed in, he's looking. And by all means, email it to me, steve@stevedace.com, and I will pass it on to Nicholas here in my inbox. So I wanted to mention that right off the jump.
Being that I have never heard of Woodruff, Wisconsin, he may have to go an hour away because, honestly, I haven't heard of it.
All right, let's go next to Josh, who says, our pediatric dentist in Tecumseh, Michigan, has kicked us out as clients because we have not vaxxed our boys. That's right, a dentist kicked us out for not vaxxing our boys, and now we've been kicked out of a children's doctor, so a pediatrician, and now the dentist as well because we haven't vaxxed our boys. Now, I chose this one, Todd, because you would have some experience with this, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
So how prevalent is this?
Oh, very. Very. I mean, I don't ultimately know. The conversation comes up in different ways. Sometimes it's somebody who's very aggressive. Sometimes it's somebody who, you know, caves to pressure, is making more of a business decision than it is flat out all in. I mean, there's a lot of people. There's the doctors who will entertain the non-vaxxed are also not often big on advertising it because they're happy to do it. But if they become a cause celeb in this, look at what happens. The guns come out. So yeah, this is not uncommon at all. I hope at the very least on the way out the door with both of these people, you did what I did once when I had a conversation with a doctor who asked me if I wanted my booster, and we got into the conversation briefly, and he was a guy who was like, he wasn't very aggressive. So he was kind of gentle, but he had something to say, and I said, no, go ahead and say it. He said, well, I got to be honest, if my kids were going to school with your kids, I don't think I'd want them sitting next to them. And I asked them, but wait a second, Doc, aren't your kids vaccinated? This is a theme Steve's brought up as well. I hope you
even before the COVID stuff, when I really didn't pay much attention to these issues, I didn't sit here and sweat it out, you know, every winter having a guy who doesn't believe in any vaccination sitting next to me, because if the stuff I got worked, then why would it matter to me? See,
here's the great thing about the magical power of vaccines. When the power is turned all the way up, they don't even believe in the power of the vaccines. This is how stupid all of this is. But that's why I have no good answers for you on how to fight back against this, because you just were handed your walking papers by cult masters, not physicians, not healers, not doctors. First and foremost, they are cult members. They had nothing at all to fear from you, and they still did this.
Jessica Jones writes, yesterday, Mark Houck, you guys remember that name, right?
Yes, but from where?
He's the one that the pro-life activist that DOJ tried to put in prison.
Right, sure.
Yeah. All right. Yesterday, Mark Houck endorsed Trump for president. Yes, the guy who was raided by the FBI with Trump's appointee at the head of it for protesting at an abortion clinic is endorsing the guy who appointed that FBI director and said he wanted to build beautiful new buildings for the FBI. Make it make sense. I follow Houck on Twitter because he's running in my district. I was so excited to vote for him, and now I'm so disappointed. I would not make this a reason for you to be disappointed. But if you wanted to make it, I chose this email not to condemn Mark Houck. Him and his family have been through enough, but to point out that Jessica, you answered your own question. You just don't realize it. You said he's running for office. I mean, the reality is the Republican Party is Donald Trump's party until further notice. And it'll be very difficult to operate within the structure of the Republican Party without acknowledging that. You can like it, you can not like it. I'm not here to say one way or the other. I'm just telling you, I'm the weather forecaster. Donald Trump does not, as the Don, as the godfather of the party, it is, and I'm using that analogy on purpose, it is not an issue-based coalition. And neither is, you know, the relationship between that you see, you know, within a structure like what a godfather runs. It's a relationship-based system. It's a loyalty-based system. And so you can be Elise Stefanik, who is openly pro-choice and was the only member of the Republican leadership that voted to give the Rainbow Jihad whatever it wanted. But you are a made woman. You are in good standing because you are loyal to the Don. All right. Elise Stefanik and Mark Houck have nothing in common. I mean, literally nothing. They have nothing in common at all. Except one thing, if they want to maintain a position of prominence politically, or in the case of Mr. Houck, attempt one, this is the price that must be paid. That's just the reality of the situation. The Republican Party has made it very clear, and its voters have made it very clear, that they want this. They want to be a Trump-based party. They want to give Trump control of their party. And so, you know, you have two choices. You can choose not to operate within it. I don't begrudge anybody that does that. You know, I've never been like get out the vote guy. You know, I was pro DeSantis, but I didn't sit here and lecture people for 6 months that they had to vote for Ron like me. I that's not my job. It's candidates. It's their jobs to get you to vote for them. It's their jobs to get you to unite behind them. Not mine. I'm a biblical worldview guy. I'll tell you what I think based on a biblical worldview and advocate for that. But then ultimately you make your own decision. So you can choose to say, I don't want to operate within that structure. And that's OK. But given the fact we have very limited agency in this country, very limited places to gain any form of representation whatsoever, most people are going to choose to go ahead and operate within that system. And if they are, it's going to be very difficult to operate within it, at least for the foreseeable future. How long is the foreseeable future? Is it 290 more days until this election? Or is it, you know, another 5 years provided Trump wins? I don't know the answer to that. You know, I just know that what the paradigm is today is you cannot operate within the Republican Party officially on an effective level without kissing the ring of the Don. That's just the reality. You can like it. You can not like it. You can cheer it. You can boo it. You know, I don't like the fact I had to call snow removal at my house and my mother-in-law's 3 times in the last 2 weeks. Didn't like it, you know, but I chose to live in Iowa And we have, last I checked, winter we have every year, right? We have winter every year.
We do.
Yeah. So that's kind of the sunk cost of living here, right? That may happen. So, and then ultimately, since I choose to live in Iowa, whose responsibility is that?
That would be you.
That would be mine. Can I do anything about the amount of times it snows or how heavy it snows? No. So I have a choice. I can choose not to live in Iowa and where I don't have to call snow removal, go to a place where I don't. Or since I've chosen to live in Iowa, I'm going to need snow removal, correct?
Yes.
That's the analogy I'm working with here?
Yes.
And then you all can determine for yourself how you want to operate within that framework or don't if you don't want to. God bless you if you don't. You know, our theme this year is Dominion. There's other ways you can have an impact, you know, without being completely vested within the Republican Party. You can do so locally, do so in your church, in your family, you know. But if you want to be, you know, if you want on a broader basis to hold elected office and or be relevant in that office, you're simply just not going to be able to do that on some level without having at some point in time been supportive of Donald J. Trump. That's just the reality of it.
Well, he didn't have to endorse anybody. You just don't.
Well, if you're worried
of why for the trap of just don't endorse.
Well, you get worried Trump will endorse against your primary candidate, then you're toast. Well, then you're just done the next day.
Okay. This is going back to Iowa evangelical whole thing, like and whatever the Catholic statistics show. I just happen to know we know those. There's all kinds of people.
Can we do this? I don't
want
to argue about Donald Trump for another 7 months, man.
I don't. Fine, but I really don't. Then, but in the context of this letter, like we can't talk about things seriously about revival or bust if we keep acting like this. You can't say it and then do things like this and have me believe you. We have way too many people who think that's exactly the best option we have on the table. And then they keep doing things that make me believe they don't actually believe it or they're not going to do their part. You don't have to do this.
Craig in Traverse City says, a cool feature to add on the show. I didn't do this on purpose. It was literally the next... A cool feature to add to the show might be an occasional segment on smoking tips from Aaron. Not, you know, with lung darts. He means with, like, you know, meat. His favorite recipes with some actual tasting on air. I got a smoker for Christmas and I want to have some fun with it. What a segue. Oh my
gosh. Why haven't you done this on your podcast, Aaron? Is it? Maybe Craig you have.
Craig in Traverse City. You know, we could do... Who were the two guys... They used to do the Willett stuff. Who am I thinking of? My kids love them.
And yeah, then Willett Blend?
Yeah, then they went like full woke and atheist. They claimed to be Christians. And then like went full rainbow jihad atheist. Or deconstructionist. That's what they were.
Rhett and Link.
That's right. They had deconstructed their faith. That's what it was.
Yeah,
right?
They were like crew staffers. Campus Crusade for Christ staffers or
something
like that.
Wow. I didn't know they were that vested in it. Okay. Can we do this? Now that I'm curious. All right. All right, so, but what about like a Willett smoke? You know? Okay. Could you put that in your smoker, Aaron, and then what it would taste like?
Yeah, we could do that. I will say there's one thing that I know I'm good at when it comes to smoking, and those are pork butts. It's a pretty cheap cut of meat, and there's a lot of meat. And it tastes really good because there's a ton of sinew in there that if you allow it to just smoke and just sit in the smoker for 12, 14, 16 hours, it melts. And it flavors up the rest of the meat and tenderizes the rest of the meat and makes it nice and juicy. What I typically do... Do you want me to do this now?
Sure.
Okay.
I read the email. It's the perfect time. Yeah.
This is my favorite recipe. And you can do whatever rub you want. But the night before I smoke it, cut off all of the excess fat, of course. I coat it then in mustard, just yellow mustard. Get a brush, coat it in yellow mustard, a lot of mustard. Kind of the acid in the mustard will kind of break through the top layer of meat there. That's my theory anyway. And then you put as much, don't go overboard with the rub. Get whatever rub you like, whatever you want to use. I use a lot from Meat Church. I'll kind of mix in the extra spicy rub a little bit with kind of regular rub. There's some local places around here that I get kind of my base rub from. you know, get it on there. Make sure it's everything, every nook and cranny and crevice and the opening. Make sure there's rub everywhere. You don't want to coat it on by like a millimeter or centimeter, but make sure there's rub everywhere. You don't want to see any of the yellow mustard poking through. That's kind of my goal. Wrap it up in plastic wrap. Set it in the refrigerator overnight. The next morning by 8 o'clock or so, get your smoker going. Take the pork butt out of the refrigerator. Get it out of the plastic wrap. Let it set for a half an hour, 45 minutes. Place it on the smoker. And then it'll take 12, 14, 16 hours. Usually by the time the sun goes down, if it's not done yet, internal temp of 195. If it's not done yet by then, I'll finish it in the oven. But make sure the internal temp gets to 195. And then really crucially, after it gets to its internal temp of 195, let it set for at least an hour before you break it up and pull it apart. The best pork butt I think I ever did was actually the first one that I did. And the sign that you've done a good pork butt is when you go to break it up, it just falls apart by itself. It just completely disintegrates by itself. That's the sign of a really, really, really good, well-done pork butt.
There you go. Will it
smoke?
Not
well done as in like dry, but just you did it well.
I'm glad we did this because I was going to have to go through this live on the air in real time, and you gave me the time to accumulate this information.
You bet.
It's seamless. Not to mention, Craig in Traverse City asked for it, so we wanted to give Craig what he wanted. Out of curiosity, I went and looked. So Rhett and Link are still going strong. Right? They're still going strong in terms of producing content. But I just went and looked. It was 4 years ago. It was the winter of 2020, almost exactly 4 years ago, that they announced they were leaving Christianity and embracing agnosticism and deconstructing their faith. Okay? Guys, I have to tell you, the traffic they are generating on YouTube since they did this has imploded. I mean, it has absolutely plummeted. And of course, the suspicion is when you do this that there's worldly gain for this, right? They started getting on with Jimmy Kimmel. I remember seeing him on, doing a couple of bits with him. All right. Their traffic on their videos, if you go to their site and look at what they were getting 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 years ago compared to the traffic they have generated the last few years. I'm talking, it is substantial. Like videos into the millions that are now in the couple hundred thousands. I mean, they've not benefited, and you know, maybe they got bought off somewhere along the line, I don't know. But in terms of their YouTube channel, which was the basis of their entire branding, their traffic has, I mean, it's plummeted, guys. I mean, it's nowhere near where it used to be. They're not posting as frequently as they used to, but I mean, it's nowhere near where it used to be. Thoughts?
I don't even know who these guys are at all. But I think the same applies to what we just got done talking. See, that Donald Trump, you can look at it from two different sides. You can endorse him and say that's just the game that has to be played, or you look at it from the other side is like you play that game and we keep losing elections. You have a decision to make, Mr. Hauk. Guess you made it.
Well, if you look at results, it's very hard to win a Republican primary without Trump's support. If you look at results, very hard to win a general election with Trump's support. Those are just the results of the last few cycles, and they speak for themselves.
You don't have to hate him. You don't have to go against him. You don't have to do any of that stuff. You can say at the end of the day, I'm going to vote for him. But like don't be bullied into some role where you have to endorse and be fine losing.
Set your smoker at 225. I forgot to say that. It's 225.
Thank you, Aaron. nice.
It's great. It's a crucial piece of information it that is I left crucial. Out.
It absolutely is. As is this. I finally remember, Todd, to get you hooked up with our friends at Patriot Mobile yesterday.
That should be like the rule for the whole year. If we start just too much into Trump, obsessed, like Aaron just breaks in with a smoking tip, like randomly.
Yep. Listen, man, I spoke my piece. I did what I could. The process played itself out. I respect the will of the people. And, you know, good luck to you. I hope you guys are right, because we need to win. So 290 days from now, I hope you guys all get to email me and say, Steve, we told you so. That's where I'm at. So for 10 years, Patriot Mobile has been America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. And when I say only, trust me, I mean only. All right. And that's why we've been huge supporters of Patriot Mobile on the show. We have been proud to partner with them with their dependable nationwide coverage, giving you the ability to access all three major networks, which means you get the same coverage you've been accustomed to, but without directly funding your enemies. We made the switch, our family did, to Patriot Mobile a couple of years ago during COVID, when T-Mobile sent out an SMS alert. Hey, we're going to start censoring texts for misinformation. And I literally called our contact at Patriot Mobile the next day and said, all right, we put this off long enough. Let's make the switch. And then I kind of dreaded what was going to happen, you know, with all the moving parts in our family. They did a phenomenal job. That's why I have no problem recommending them to you, recommending them to Todd. I hooked them up yesterday. So go to PatriotMobile.com and find out for yourself how outstanding their 100% U.S.-based customer service team is. PatriotMobile.com, if you're a veteran or first responder, let them know when you go to make the switch. They have extra ways to say thank you for your service. For the rest of us, use the offer code Steve to get a free activation when you go to PatriotMobile.com/Steve. That's PatriotMobile.com/Steve or call 972 Patriot. That's 972 Patriot. Let's go back to Feedback Friday. This is Steve. He says, I know the events your team covers can be frustrating at times, so I thought I'd share a short story with you. I started listening to your show a few years ago when I just let the Blaze TV feed continue running rather than swapping over to Steven Crowder when he was on the Blaze. It took a few shows for you guys to grow on me. We hear that a lot. You know what we've never heard?
You guys right away.
I've never gotten that. Like, it never. It's never happened. Yes, it is. I mean, literally.
Co-stanza.
Yeah, it has never happened.
Sense when the tagline, the honest tagline for this show is, screw you and thanks for listening.
Yes. No one has ever said, man, it was love at first sight. All right? No. Or fight first bite, B-Y-T-E. No. It's either, my goodness, I can't stand you, or you are an acquired taste. Indeed. What was the old thing Jim Rome used to say back in the day? Listen to it for a week. And if you don't like it, just keep listening to it anyway. That's what he used to say back in the day. All right. So Steve writes, it took a few shows for you guys to grow on me, but your passion for God and discussion of current events resonated. I've been away from church and the word for many years because I thought my anger and rage, as well controlled as it was, had broken me in a way that was beyond saving. Then I heard you talk about Elijah in Mount Carmel and the prophets of Baal being slaughtered. And that was a story I'd never heard. And I knew that whatever it was that prompted Elijah to do that was what I needed. I'd already started attending church regularly. So the next Sunday, I started reading the Bible, starting with Kings, where that story is located. Since then, my child has been baptized. My wife was confirmed and baptized. I've continued reading the scriptures, prayed for God to take away my anger and rage. And he did. Prayed for him to help me quit looking at porn. God delivered again. Attended Bible study regularly, and it's been that way now for about 2 years. The changes have been miraculous. I'm now an elder at the church at the elderly age of 38. I've even thought about attending seminary. Signed, Steve, just a guy that was too lazy to change channels on the Blaze and inadvertently turned back to God.
Perfect.
Perfect.
We needed that after all. See, that's what I mean. You don't have to do it that way. In any other walk of life, you don't have to compromise the way you think you do. If this is really what you want. If it's not what you want, I understand why you compromise on everything. But this is really what you want, then stop telling yourself lies in other walks of life. That's it, right there. That's the truth. And the miracles come when you accept that.
Yeah, that was really, really encouraging, man. The only thing I would say, maybe don't go to seminary. Maybe don't go to seminary.
There is a direct correlation, with limited exception on the seminary issues. There does tend to be a direct correlation between the amount of time you spend in seminary and how much you still end up believing the Bible. There's a few seminaries where there's always a remnant, you know. There's a few seminaries where that's not the case. But by and large, collectively, the more time you spend in a seminary these days, the less likely you are to believe the Bible when you come out.
And basically anything that you can
that's very bad.
In seminary, you can learn online already. You can learn in resources that are available to you already.
Now, if you are hooked into a denomination that has like its own seminary feeder system and stuff like that, you know, and since you're already at their church, you know, they're into the word and they're on the narrow road. Okay, that's totally different, you know, totally different. But just do your homework. Like I give you, like, you know, my wife has a seminary degree. That was the first step to getting her biblical counseling, and you know, her therapist stuff. So I'll tell you what seminary she went to. Luther Rice in Atlanta, Georgia is where my wife has a seminary degree. And I went through all of her theology classes and stuff with her, you know, and everything was very Orthodox, very premillennial, very premill dispensational, but that's pretty standard for much of American evangelicalism these days, but also very biblical, you know. So just be selective on the seminary that you choose. Be selective. Where do I want to go next? Because we are short on time. Eddie says, the day I became a believer in Christ, I dropped to my knees before bed, asked God to give me guidance in doing his will. After that, I threw on Hulu and I saw an ad for a Christian dating app. I never saw that ad before that night, and I've never seen it after. Fast forward to today, I just bought a ring, and I will be proposing to a dime that I met on that app. The Lord works in mysterious ways. He took me from being a wannabe playboy that only cared about myself to proposing to a girl that has grown up in a godly family.
Oh, the hits just keep on coming now. Yeah. See? There's a different way.
There is a different
way.
It's
just up to you.
The broader point that Todd is making is something we have made on this show many times. It is not so much about the final decision you make. I mean, there is no good process for, you know, I'm going to become a pedophile. Not a good process to come to that conclusion, right? Okay, so there are clear conclusions that you can draw that no matter how good your thinking process was, that's bad. All right, pretty obvious, okay?
Yes.
But barring those extreme examples, most of the time in life, it's not about the decision you made, but why you made it and the process you took to get there. Go back to who Josh Hammer was just talking about last hour. Nick Saban, right? What did he call his methodology? You guys know what he called it? The process. That's what he called it, the process. Yeah, yeah, sure. Absolutely, man. We'll pump sunshine in you. We'll take care of your mama, you know, when we're recruiting you, you bet. But once you get here, the process is on, all right? And you're not a star. You're just one of many. And we will break you down to build you back up. And if you can't hack it, go somewhere else and lose a lot more games and you'll lose here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So for all the, you know, yeah, you know, we'll take care of your mama, make sure you got a house and all that other stuff Nick Saban did for years. Once you stepped into the football building, you were a plebe. You were going to learn how to suffer, how to overcome. You're going to learn to overcome adversity. That's how it's frankly kind of almost it's almost harder to get that many five-star recruits to play together that many years in a row than it is to be a Wisconsin or Iowa kind of program where you're developmental and you got plucky kids that, you know, have a chip on their shoulder. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. To get that many star players every single year to set egos aside and play together requires a process. You know, mm-hmm. And that's the thing that Todd is saying is it's not so much, you know, I got to endorse Trump. Well, I mean, maybe you do. But what was the process you took by which you made that selection other than just knee jerk reactionaryism, time to grovel? And that's true of literally any walk of life. What is the process by which you made that decision more so than the decision itself? Aaron, did you and Bella take anything when you guys had this really bad that helped at all?
We do baths, Epsom salt baths to try to detox. I really didn't take anything other than NyQuil one night so I could just sleep. Okay. She ended up, as I said, having to take some antibiotics for some infections that kind of developed as a result. But no, we just try to do this as naturally as possible.
Okay. Yo. All right, back here on the Steve Dace Show, powered by Miracle Made. Did you know your temperature at night can have one of the greatest impacts on your sleep quality? If you wake up too hot or too cold, I recommend highly you check out Miracle Made's bed sheets. These guys came on board last year right in the middle of the worst summer heat we've had in a long time here in the Midwest. And I was blown away. You know, we have lived in the same home for 17 years. This summer was the first time I did not run the ceiling fan at night in order to augment the central air in order to get a good night's sleep. Didn't have to do it with these sheets. Well, Steve, okay, great. That was great for the summertime. What about now? Well, the NASA-inspired silver-infused fabric that makes temperature-regulating bedding possible so you can sleep at the perfect temperature all night long, they're killing it right now. We've got that record cold, not quite as record cold, but that terrible cold just came back to Iowa again. Man, I slept like a rock last night. These are fantastic, and I know what you're thinking. Hey, I can get temperature regulating from like aluminum foil. Wouldn't be comfortable. Got it. They're very comfy. Highly recommend. I love these sheets. All right. Self-cooling, self-heating, self-temperature regulating properties for a better quality of sleep. By the way, that same silver, by the way, prevents about 99% of bacterial growths on your sheets as well. Right. So go to trymiracle.com/dace to try these sheets today. Whether you're buying them for yourself or for a loved one, you can order today at trymiracle.com/dace and save over 40%. And if you use our promo code DACE at checkout, you can save an extra 20% and get 3 free towels. You're going to love these, I promise. Upgrade your sleep now with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/dace. That's trymiracle.com/dace. Use the code DACE, the code DACE at trymiracle.com/dace. All right, back to Feedback Friday. Let's go here. My name is Thomas Hill. I'm a 19-year-old college freshman at Liberty University, where my wife is an alum. That's where she got her master's, so congrats. I have listened to you on and off since you were on Blaze TV, by the way. After I just said what I just said about never in my career has someone ever sent me a note of feedback. Love this show from the first moment I heard it. My inbox now is getting bombarded. That wasn't the broadcaster equivalent of tell me I'm pretty or do these jeans make my butt look big? All right, it wasn't. I was just making an observation. Well, now we are getting absolutely bombed, okay, with people. Love this show from the first minute I heard it. First time I heard the show. So thank you. It wasn't a fish for a compliment, but I am not too shameless to accept them anyway, for goodness sakes. So thank you. All right. Anyway, Thomas says, I first heard about you on Blaze TV's 2020 election night special, and I've started listening daily to you and Ali Stuckey ever since. Since then, I've really been blessed by your show and that's focused on a biblical worldview. I'm writing to you in response to your shows on December 19th and December 20th. So these were our end of the year shows. On December 19th, you talked about it as time for men to step up and take action. You said the same thing, that some things are simply evil and we have a duty to respond. I am a dedicated pro-life activist and have recently been learning about the history of pro-life rescues and sit-ins. Ironically, the revival of rescue has been led not by Christians, but by pro-life progressive activists and a few elderly holdovers from the rescue movement of the 70s and 80s and early 90s, nine of whom are now in prison for violating the FACE Act. Do you believe that it is time to bring this movement back? I have felt convicted that as Christians, we have a responsibility to seek justice and defend the vulnerable and believe that we need to take direct action against the mass genocide of abortion. Am I correct on this? Should we begin to start extending our counseling of where we talk to women and bring back the sit-ins and the blockades of abortion facilities? I hope to participate in a rescue this next year and want to try and activate Christian students at Liberty to revive the rescue movement. Can we as Christians do this in good conscience, even though it is against the law, the man-made law? And is this the right time? Again, that is from Thomas Hill. Years ago, I was listening to a John Piper podcast, and he talked about being a part of the original Operation Rescue movement in the 80s. And John Piper made a very fascinating point that stuck with me. And he said that his greatest regret as a pro-life activist is that it seemed right when they were making headway by participating in these kinds of sit-ins, the spirit of the age started making it criminal. Pastors started going to jail for this, and they weren't willing to go to jail for it and stop doing it. And I must have listened to this pod. This podcast has to be like at least 10 years old. So we're well before the overturning of Roe. In fact, we're in a period of time where the idea of overturning Roe is still not even on the radar. All right. I'm not here to tell other people when or when not to engage in something that puts you in legal jeopardy, particularly with the current people in charge of the legal process that are trying to end you, your ability to have a job, to be a functioning member of society. Okay. We were just talking about Mark Houck and what was done to him, or they tried to anyway. I will, though, say this. I think everybody has to do that according, they have to follow the dictates of their own conscience where that is concerned. And let the Holy Spirit guide them in threading the needle between being aggressive to maybe radical without succumbing to the spirit of the age and being disqualified for the prize by behaving in a way that brings ill repute on your Lord. Fair? Is that fair so far?
Yeah.
Okay. But I will say this historically. It has been when we have been willing to do this as believers, these kinds of things, at the risk of societal retribution, that we have often been the most successful when it comes to positive societal change. Whether that is the monk Telemachus going to the floor of the Roman Colosseum and essentially trying to stop them from engaging anymore in the savagery of the gladiator games, and he lost his life for that. On Monday, you know, we had a couple different things happen on Monday. We had an Iowa caucus, and of course that's where our focus was on Monday, right? Monday was also President's Day, right? What else was Monday? MLK Day.
Yeah, wait. It was both on the same day?
Yeah. I thought it was, wasn't it?
Isn't President's Day in February?
No, President's Day is in February. My bad. Yeah. You're right. Thank you. So it was caucus day and MLK Day was on Monday. Thank you. This is what starting with Ebenezer Baptist, this is what MLK did. This kind of nonviolent, civil disobedient, peaceful protest. So not my place when and where to tell people to risk having essentially their lives ruined, and not just their own, but their loved ones, given the environment we are in today. But I will say historically, it has been when we are willing to risk those things that we have been our greatest agents for change. And not when we have settled on, I guess that's just the corrupt system we have and we have to work within it and I'll do my best to make it work. That's not when we've done our best. In fact, I can't actually think of too many great things we've done as a church, collectively, the church, when we've done that. We've been far more likely to do great things for the kingdom when we haven't tried to pour new wine into old wineskins. But There is a time and a place for that, for sure. And everybody has to follow the dictates of their own conscience where that is concerned. I want to go to this one here next that just came into my inbox because I want to address it if you guys don't mind. Where is it? M. Matt writes, Ted Cruz endorsed Trump to win re-election. I love how you avoid this. Wow. Well, we're not avoiding it, number one. So, because we just read your email. But I wanted to bring this up to say this. Ted actually called me on Tuesday to give me a... He didn't have to do that. Doesn't owe that to me at all. But he wanted to give me a heads up that this was coming and why. And that essentially, hey, man, I wanted to, you know, a lot of people that I am friends with that worked with me and for me were working with the governor, and I've been under immense pressure from Trump and his team to endorse. I wanted to give you guys all the runway I could to see how the process played itself out. Well, you had a pretty definitive verdict. But I didn't want to blindside you, so I'm calling you and a few others so that you guys know what's going on, just what I'm thinking, man to man. Got the same note from Josh Hammer this morning. Yep, we booked Josh to come on before he wrote the piece for Newsweek about why he thought it was time now to unite behind Trump. Again, Josh doesn't have to do that. Yeah, we're buds, but he doesn't owe that to me. He doesn't have to give me a heads up on what he's writing, but it was very respectful that he did. This actually goes to what we were just saying at the end of the last episode, or last segment. What is the process by which you have made the decisions that you have made? As opposed to, what is the decision that you did make? I'm far more interested in that. Far more interested. So I got that note, and I thought it was a good opportunity to mention what Ted did. So, Matt, we did mention it. So, wow, the other way. What's next? Heather writes, just to give you a little understanding of my background, when I was younger, my mother used to drag me to church like many Gen Xers. It wasn't until my father passed away that I did turn back to God. I wanted to be a good servant of the Lord, so I started reading the Bible. When I came upon the passages about David, I was happy that I found someone I was familiar with. It was not until I started reading deeper into his life that he seemed to be a womanizer, stealing other men's wives as well as building a harem. I always thought that marriage was between a man and a woman. I have to be honest, I almost threw my Bible out the window. I know we are all sinners, but even to this day, I cringe when his name is brought up. Please help me understand him. Thank you for all you do, and I'm grateful I found you guys in these troubling times. Heather, you answered your own question. We're all sinners. You know, when you hear people say, well, God works through problematic people, why is that the case? There are only problematic people. By the way, though, if you read those passages, David suffers greatly for his sinfulness. When he has a civil war with his son Absalom. I mean, he had the child that he sired out of the adulterous affair with Bathsheba is stillborn. I mean, David suffers greatly. These things that he does do not go unpunished. So David plays a prominent role, a foundational role in the establishment of the Jewish kingdom, God's covenant people, and in the cementing of the messianic line. But when he sins, he suffers. And even worse, when he sins as king, almost everyone does, because they're under his stewardship. God punished his sinfulness. So keep that in mind. There's lots of polygamy in the Bible. Because there was lots of polygamy at the time the Bible was written. Everybody who practices it suffers. Abraham practices it. That's how we got Islam. Ishmael. Everybody suffers when they do this. Every time someone goes outside of the marriage covenant, one man and one woman, they suffer. Every single time. Every time. So, does God use troubled, broken people to advance his larger narrative? Yes. But he's not like us. He's both immanent and transcendent. So while he is using those troubled people to advance his larger narrative, when their brokenness is on display and they act out on it again, they suffer for it. He holds them accountable at the exact same time. Don't lose sight of that. And it's very emblematic, by the way, of the larger truth that what gets the final word, God's grace or God's justice? Yes. Heaven is the symbol that God's grace gets the last word to those who humble themselves. Hell is the symbol that God's justice gets the last word for those who do not. Well, Steve, the Bible goes even further where David is concerned and says he's a man after God's own heart. Why? Understand, you know, take that for what it really says. Does the Bible say that David was a well-behaved man? Is that what it says? Is that what it says?
No.
No. Does it say that David kept God's moral law better than anybody else? Is that what it says?
No.
No. It said that David was a man after God's own heart. So therefore, what does that mean? It means that David understood, despite his brokenness, he understood the order of things. God is God and I am not. That if we are humble, if we humble our hearts and understand our place in the grand scheme of things, despite all of that brokenness, God can use us and do use us for amazing things and do amazing things through us. But make no mistake, what you're noticing, Heather, God is the hero of the Bible. Not Moses, not David, not Peter, not Paul. God. God is the hero. It's his story. Capital H-I-S. He's the hero. We name our kids David because it would be real sanctimonious and pretentious to just go around naming our kids Yahweh all the time, right? Or Jesus. It'd be pretty... Yeah, so we name our kids David and Samson instead. That's another guy very problematic, by the way. Even David's like, dude, slow it down. Okay, so God's the hero of the story, not David. You've noticed the right things, but I would urge your reaction to be, wow. How great and merciful of a God is God that he is willing to work and exalt such awful people, broken people. And then maybe that should give you the humility to think, you know, maybe God, despite my brokenness, can actually work through me. Amen. All right, everybody, have a great weekend. Stay warm if you live where I do. Good luck with that. Until Monday, Romans 8:28.